You don't need me to be like, well, when my grandmother cooked eggplant, it was like, you don't need it.
I do.
You might need that.
I need to hear about your grandmother's eggplant.
Welcome to Signal, the podcast that raises your frequency. I'm Maury Fontanez.
And I'm Melissa Grushka.
And Bean, today we're talking about creativity with a very special guest, writer and director Andrew Russell. Are you ready?
I'm very ready.
Bean, what's up?
Oh, Bean, we took a hiatus.
We didn't really. Our listeners don't know that.
Right, but we took a two-week break because of various things that we had to attend. Yes, so it's really lovely to see your face again back on this platform.
I know. Here we are, and we have the beautiful opportunity to talk to my amazing friend and talented writer, director, Andrew Russell. Andrew, welcome.
Hi, it's a pleasure to be here. I love this podcast, so I'm happy to get to talk to you.
Andrew is one of our amazing loyal listeners who listens and sends me little feedbacks and little comments, and I love it. It makes me so happy. I really feel so excited when you like it, Andrew, because your taste level is so high. So I feel like we've achieved a gold star.
I have a weekly meeting that I go to, and I always put it on when I walk to that meeting. It's like a very beautiful ceremony.
What a ritual.
Yeah.
Check out our rituals episode.
We're honored. Andrew, since you listen, you know what we're about to do, which is some cringe and delight so we can catch up. By the way, I'm getting such varied feedback. Andrew, we'd love your thoughts on this. Some people are like, shut up with the banter. Like, make it fast. Some people are like, oh my God, I love it. I don't know. I guess if you don't love it, what I would say is fast forward to like the 5 minute mark or the 7 minute mark. And go from there.
I thought the banter was part of our vibe. I didn't realize. Oh, Andrew, please chime in.
Yeah, where do you fall?
Well, I think it's part of the DNA of the program. Like, I think it's what you are offering. Aesthetically, because I'm a storyteller and I love things like buttoned up and controlled and organized. I'm also a tourist from the Midwest, so that is an element. But like, I tend to be the kind of person that's like, ooh, get me into the juice, get me into the narrative, let's go. But that's not what you're like. The whole vibe and energy of what you've built is, oh, we could just be sitting around having coffee and talking, and humans are humans. So I think that you kind of have to embrace that.
Thanks, Andrew. And if you don't like it, fast forward. Is the end of the story.
I was going to say something meaner.
You were.
You said it nicely. I thought you were going to say, if you don't like it, you know.
I got you. All right. Well, who wants to start? Bean, do you have anything cringy or delightful?
I do. I have a cringe, and it's actually perfect that Andrew is here because I think that it's going to shift my cringe into Delight Town. That's what I think is going
to
happen. My cringe is, we have mentioned it many times, but I am Maury's assistant as well as her best buddy and her podcast co-host. And I have now taken on an additional role of handling some social media for this podcast, which is all new territory for me. And I'm not going to lie, I have cried several times this week. No, it's not your fault. And it's just cringy because I'm old and I am just learning all of these basic skills, which you know, and it takes time and it takes a lot, but it makes you feel really shitty about yourself when you have no clue what's going on and you don't know where to start. And you just feel overwhelmed all the time. I have nothing but gratitude that I am in this space, but it is a lot and it feels cringy. Yeah. And it feels cringy as an adult to feel so like suddenly incapable. And I feel like my creativity is not being maximized because I'm so focused on like the tech aspect, which as Andrew got a real quick glimpse into prior to recording, is not my strong suit either. So I'm like, I feel like I'm building from the ground up and I can't tap into my creativity because I'm so focused on just like even learning how to post things properly.
Yeah.
The end.
That's super relatable.
Don't feel guilty.
Totally.
Bean, don't feel guilty. Right? I could see your face.
Also, don't you think, I mean, Andrew, these are not basic skills. I think that like for our generation, understanding social media is not basic.
No, I don't think it's basic. And I also think at some point AI is just going to do everything. True. And the thing that it won't be able to do is be charming and human and real, which is your superpower. So like if you're gonna work to master something, I would focus on your humanity versus on how to, you know, toggle the right switch. Because it's just, it's like any skill. It's like me opening Excel. It's like a nightmare.
Yes. I feel the same way about all things computer.
It's so, yeah. Andrew, that is such a good point. Like, it's really about your, like, who you are and how you show up. It's not really about the skill set. Like, the skill set's going to get automated. I love that.
But I'm not
sure. It's going to get automated. And it's also like the, I was saying this to a young designer, which is like, it, like, yes, you have to have the basic skills to do a certain thing. But at the end of the day, it's like how you then bring those skills to the table as a maker and as a creator and like as a person that interfaces with other people.
Right.
So yeah. I'm celebrating you.
Wow. This is the most Melissa. Insightful cringe delight cringe and ever delight. Experienced.
That's true. Well, you went deep with your cringe. It wasn't like I stepped in a puddle. You were like, I feel like a useless
I feel
old
like
lady.
A failure and keep crying.
So now Andrew has to be a therapist.
You gotta give me some love.
That's why we invited you on, Andrew, is to make us feel better. Because
I'll make you feel better.
You're doing a great job.
It's
a skill I have.
Well, right, why don't you tell us about your week, Andrew?
Yeah.
My cringe slash delight is for about 6 weeks, I've been navigating this some sort of skin condition, rash condition. And it has been like a true whack-a-mole journey. And it essentially at this point is I shouldn't say is just, but has like been diagnosed as eczema and is now being treated and is like abating, which is a win. But part of why I articulate it for two reasons. One is I have a lot of steroids in my system, so get ready to go. Like that's why I when I sat down at the beginning of this and then stood back up, that's exactly why. But it also means you're gonna get like creativity. It's gonna be like real
masculine, gonna be manly creativity.
Wow. No, it'll probably just be high energy, and then at some point I'll forget what I have said.
That's basically what we do all week. So
perfect. You'll fit in perfectly.
Perfect. But the cringe piece is like, you know, if and it's a pro tip then for everyone else, which is like if ever it's weird or specific or like not your normal thing, just go right to the specialist. Like I should have gone to a dermatologist 6 weeks ago versus like urgent care and my regular doctor and then urgent care, etc. Like just go to the specialist who does the thing. So good news is though, I think we're on the mend and you're going to get some amped up conversation because of it.
Well, are you off dairy? No dairy exacerbates eczema.
Dr. Melissa.
That's great. I appreciate knowing that because I don't consume any dairy.
Perfect. Keep at it.
So I'm ready.
Great.
Yeah.
Thanks, Bean, with the white lab coat on. Andrew, I have heard from multiple friends who have eczema that it is the most, like, it can be, like, so not just uncomfortable, but painful. And, like, it really does interrupt your life.
Yeah, it's brutal. It's brutal.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. I mean, I'm truly more just thrilled that I have a solution.
Yes.
And that, like, there's a way out. Because there was such a period of time where I was like, what is this?
Yes. Yeah. That's the worst when you don't know what's wrong, which actually is going to take me to my cringe, and I'm going to do it quickly for all the people who are like, shut the hell up. I am trying to figure out what's wrong with me, but I get these weeks. It's probably 1 week a month. Maybe not. Maybe it's more where right around 3 o'clock, I have like this bone aching exhaustion. Like I could get in bed and fall asleep. Kind of. And my bones hurt. So then yesterday I Googled gluten and exhaustion because what I noticed is the day before yesterday, I was fine. Then yesterday I had this like Persian bread that we get from the bakery here. That's so good, but it's like super gluten-y and I was exhausted an hour later. And so now I'm wondering if I have celiac disease. Guys,
not celiac.
But you said, I'm not a doctor, but you said it happens once a week every month versus
I know.
It happening like directly in response
it's
to
not,
something.
It doesn't have to do with my cycle. I've tracked it.
I'm going to hook you up with someone who's going to help you.
Fix me?
On your journey. Yes.
Oh, okay, great. Look at this. We're just solving all medical problems.
Anyways,
my cringe is like that I feel old and useless. Like we bought this Frisbee, Keon and I, that is the coolest Frisbee, you guys. I don't know what to tell you why.
Cool.
It's like made of this material where it just like, you know when you, okay, this is ridiculous. I'm sorry. I'm excited about a Frisbee. Last time it was about whale sounds. This is my life. But it's made of a material that like when you throw it, it really flies. So you feel like you're really good at it. Does that make sense? Like it makes up for the user error. So we love it because we feel like pros.
And maybe you are pros. Play,
we might be pros. We actually might go pro.
Yeah.
But he wants to play and I can't.
Because I'm laying there. I'm laying there tired. And yeah, so it's cringy because I feel like he's has an old lady mom.
Wow. Yeah, I think like just do a little stay on the investigation.
Okay.
Like I had a very different, but I had similar thing, and I went and got like all my like levels checked, and like my testosterone was like totally off.
Right.
And so I was like, oh, like so there's also some just basic like measurements to make sure. Why am I pretending like I'm a doctor?
Well, because Melissa's rubbed off on you. She does this every.
Well,
episode.
I also, and you can ask my husband this. I call, like, if I had a drag name, it would be Petri Dish because I will catch everything. Like, you name a weird thing and I will catch it, which is why the last 6 weeks have been bonkers. So I unfortunately do, like, I have had a lot of experience with, like, oh, that weird thing that you were describing. Like, if at any point anyone's like, I need to know more about the difference between bacterial, fungal, and eczema, I want my own episode.
Wow.
I feel like we should open a medical practice, the three of us, with the knowledge
this
we're bringing.
This is officially the last episode you're ever going to be allowed to do. This is
no
the moment.
More guests.
It all ends.
We were like, he's going to help us boost ratings, and now we're opening a medical practice.
Podcast over. All right. Well, anyway. Listen. Thank you guys for listening to my woes, and I'm glad to hear that we're all in the same boat of aging and issues. Andrew. We wanted to have Andrew on today because why do you look like you're going to throw up, Bean?
Me?
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe I'm going to throw up. I'm still thinking about my cringe and how my creativity is so stifled right now.
Right. Right.
And that you're like, you'll be great for this job because you're creative and you're a great writer. And I get there and I'm like a blank. It's like a blank. I just totally am gone.
Hence why we wanted to talk to Andrew. So why do we want to do this episode? Bean and I were talking about different topics that we could continue to think about for you listeners on your growth and self-actualization journey. And we hit this concept of creativity. And, you know, as Bean just said during her cringe, there's a lot of limiting belief systems we have about creativity. Are we creative enough? Is everyone creative? Can I even do it? And I thought, you know what, Bean, I've got the perfect person, my good friend, one of the most talented people I've ever worked with, honestly, Andrew, who's a writer and a director and just thinks creatively, writes creatively, just embodies it to me. So that's why Andrew's here, to help us understand how we can be creative.
Great. Andrew, I want to know more about you. Tell me everything, start to finish. We've got hours. Let's go.
Thank you for that. And thanks for having me here. It really means a lot. I love talking about creativity. I love talking about storytelling. I love talking about the intersection of identity and spirituality and mental health as it relates to creativity. So it's in many ways a good fit for me to have this conversation with y'all. I grew up in Indiana in the middle of cornfields, a very rural environment. I am the epitome of a future farmer of America. I'm not really, it's just a joke, but I do.
You guys need to go on YouTube and watch this and look at the future farmer of America.
Spitting image.
Yeah.
I will say that if the topic of this podcast was 80s and 90s female country singers, then this would need to be multiple hours, but it isn't. So there we go.
Let's talk Bonnie Raitt.
Yeah.
I could go get my Bonnie Raitt t-shirt if you want me to put it on.
Amazing.
But the reason I mention that is that I had a robust amount of energy as a child. And yes, that could be linked to creativity, but I think it's just something even deeper than that. And at first, my parents in the house, I grew up in a very colorful, creative house, but it really became a question of like how to channel that energy. And I remember that there was really a moment where I was like, do we put him in theater camp or do we get him medicated? And as someone who right now is very medicated, and I don't just mean from steroids, this isn't like a message to say like medications are not useful or good in the world, but it was such an interesting crossroads for my parents. And I got deeply involved with theater. And what happened is essentially storytelling, what I like to say is like storytelling became my Adderall. Like what happens when I watch a story or like when I turn off all the lights and as a youngster watched, you know, like Working Girl or Fried Green Tomatoes or Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. At this point, by the way, if my sexuality was not clear to anyone, it officially is clear now. But what happened is it is so much of the chaos that comes from a ADHD and a cyclothymic brain, and cyclothymia is like a third version of bipolar, is that it takes all of that chaos and all of that noise and all of that busyness and it focuses it because you've got given circumstances, you've got characters, you've got a really narrow story arc. And so therefore what you're having to process mentally and physiologically calms the fuck down. Mm. And so that's when I really like fell into story, both from Yesa creator point of view of like, I want to be a theater maker and an artist in my life, but also from just a reconciliation with soul point of view. After that, I went to Carnegie Mellon as an actor with a bunch of fancy folks that are all now still fancy, and moved to New York for many years and did what you can do in your early 20s, which is just like everything all at once. I was Tony Kushner's assistant. I was doing this creative consulting for Universal. I was directing my own work. I was assistant directing on Broadway, like all those things that like you think you'll just always be able to do. And then you get older and you're like,
pick one.
One of those things, correct. And after that, I moved to Seattle to run a theater company for almost 10 years, which is how I intersected with Maury. And then since 2017, have been working freelance, splitting time between New York and LA as a writer and a director. Like I said, mostly of theater and mostly of stories that are based on real life, which isn't surprising because of my love of humans and also what I said earlier about kind of how you take endless information and data and overwhelm and how you distill it and simplify it and focus it. But yeah, that's how I ended up doing what I do. I also, as Maury knows and Melissa, you know as well, I also do a lot of creativity and storytelling teaching and coaching, whether that's in the corporate sector, the nonprofit sector, or individuals that are working on projects. And I mention that because it has given me really a lot of insight in the topic that you bring up of like, are we naturally creative? Does it just flourish on its own versus something that you can cultivate and teach? So I'm thrilled to bring all of that onto this screen and into this microphone with you all.
Well, and you're such a talented teacher of it. The first time I ever met Andrew, we talked about this once when we started to become closer friends, is like we both clocked each other immediately. Like I could tell you what Andrew was wearing. Andrew could tell you what I was wearing. It was like instant love.
I remember the dress.
Totally. So
I remember the corner you walked around. It was like in a romantic comedy.
Totally. And I remember leaving and saying to TJ, who I was just dating at the time, like, "Oh my god, I'm in love." And TJ's like, "I knew it," because TJ had known you or something, and he was like, "I knew when you met Andrew." But we were in this workshop when it was the agency that I was at, and we were in this workshop, and it was all us client leaders, and they always put us through these like corporate workshops. And it was always kind of like an eye roll. It was like, okay, sure. But Andrew just captivated us from the beginning. And truly, when I say a teacher of creativity, it wasn't like you taught me how to be creative. It's that you reminded me that I have it, that I am. Right. And it was about like tapping into how do you find the story and tell the story.
Right.
So I want to ask you, when you think of this word creative, like, do you think you're of yourself as a creative? Have you always, like, how do you exist with this word creativity for yourself?
I do think of myself as creative. I would say generally I have always. One thing that I did not always do, and this is true of my own mental health journey and spiritual journey, which is for so long I would be like, how do other people deal with this? Or how do other people deal with blank? And whatever blank was, is what would be going on in like the sphere of my psyche. You know what I mean? Like whether that's mania or whether that's overwhelm or whether that's just like so many creative thoughts. And it took me years and a lot of good therapists to be like, oh, you know what? That doesn't happen in everyone's brains. You know, like the question of how does someone else deal with blank is not a universal thing. And I don't say that to mean that like other people are not creative by any means, but I think that I think that's true of like whatever your superpower is that, you know, other people's brains are not going to necessarily like think in that way.
Right.
So I think that it has to do with, it's like cultivation and practice. You know, it's like why I try to say, I will often introduce myself as a director and a writer, but I will often say like, if someone's like, what do you do? I'll be like, oh, I'm writing a play about blank, or I'm directing a thing about this. Because like when you, like you can say you're a writer, you can say you're a director, you can say you're a creator, but when you actually look at a pie chart of your day and you say like, okay, how much of that day was devoted to this thing that I said that I am? Mm-hmm. It's sort of like saying you run marathons, but you can barely walk. Mm. So it's just a matter of like how much time you are attending to the interiority of what is involved in creativity. Because yes, I think everyone has little, big, giant doors that go somewhere fascinating. I mean, just think of how weird your dreams are.
Right.
Like, think of the weirdest dream you've ever had. And then that's the extent of your, like, that's the reach of your creativity.
Oh, that's it? That. Oh, no. The weirdest dream I've ever had is as creative as I get?
I mean, I, first off, opinion of one. And also, you know, you're talking to someone also who was giving medical advice earlier. So just be careful what you take. I bet you've had some weird dreams, and whether you remember them or not, I bet they're
dreams.
Yeah. I mean, what I love about that is like that is happening in your subconscious, which means it's possible for you.
Correct. It's there. Yeah. It's totally there. It's just, it's like the 80-20 rule. So it's going to only be about 20% inspiration.
So is your brain constantly flowing with creativity, or is it like you just have moments where you're inundated and you're like, oh my gosh, I have to write this down? Or is it just like
both are true, but you have to I have to, per the like raised in farmland Midwestern pattern based human, I have to have a real structured practice around it. There's like an old saying, which is like, for the muse to call or for the muse to visit, the muse needs to know where you are. And so like you have to have a system, and you have to train yourself. I have a lot of thoughts on this subject. You have to train yourself to listen to what's going on inside. So it's not that dissimilar from like the intuition work that you all do on the regular, because it's how do you minimize the space between the impulse that you have and the action. So like a little mini thing that I do is that I have a lot of different songs going through my head. And what I try to do is that the minute that a song gets in my head, I play it. And usually after that, like it either the algorithm takes it or I think of something else I want to listen to next. But what I'm just training my brain to do is say like thing on inside can come to life outside. Right. And usually thing on inside is like deeply rooted to like me. You know what I mean? Like it's like, oh my God, I haven't listened to that Meatloaf song in so long. And I wonder if it's still boom, push play. Like how fast can you push play? And also then when you listen to it, you're just like free. Like you've acknowledged your insides in a different way. And that's like a really tiny thing. But it really has helped. And I use it kind of as a metaphor because there are a lot of other ways. Like we can talk more about this, but like when I write in segments. It's called the Pomodoro method. When I like look at my week, I have like a real structure to the amount of hours that I want devoted to output and the amount of hours I want devoted to input. And I think this is why I mentioned that like 80-20 rule is it's like only 20% of the time that you're like, oh my God, what if she said this to him? Or what if it was a story about blank? And the other 80% is doing what you do if you are an accountant or a farmer or you name it, you know, it's showing up and doing the work. That's my dog barking. If it's an issue, let me know.
It is not an issue. We love dogs here. Wait, you just said something that like rocked my world.
He said something rocked my world.
Oh, what was your, no, I go first.
Please.
When you said thing on the inside is possible outside, I thought, wait, that's what we need. Like we constantly need evidence that we can manifest things. So like this trick of, I think of a song, I play it to prove to my brain, hey, you thought of this. Let me show you how real it is. Okay. So Bean, what was your moment of enlightenment with Andrew?
It was just that I constantly, speaking of dreams and tying this all together, I constantly wake up with random songs in my head all the time. And I just said to my middle daughter the other day, I wonder what is happening that is, and it's often like what was that Meatloaf song? It'll be a song I haven't thought about in 15 years. And suddenly it's in my head. A Cranberries song came up like last week to me. And I was like, what? Cranberries?
Yeah.
And I don't often play them. I just keep singing them in my head over and over. And I keep thinking, why is this in my head? Now I am going to play them and see where that takes me.
Yeah.
Yeah. You'll feel it. You'll feel it in your body too. Because like if somewhere inside you is like, hey, check this out. Right. Just think about how your nervous system's going to feel because of that.
Like listen to it.
It's not just a song stuck in your head. It's telling you, hey, go listen to this.
Right. Something's going to trigger something. Andrew, you've just changed our lives.
We're done with this episode.
Goodbye. Thanks for listening.
I'll see you later. But at the core of it is, what is the physical action you are taking in response to some sort of, like when I do have those, to answer your early question, Melissa, of like big ideas and like overwhelm. Like I have a journal that is just starter ideas. Right? Like, it'll literally just be like, okay, the bones are in the backyard and the old lady doesn't want to tell anyone. Or what if Meatloaf was sung by a children's choir? Or a country music star goes mute.
Andrew,
like, shit like that.
Andrew, I need to walk around in your head for like a week just to see what's going on.
Oh, it's dazzling.
I just want to explore the fascinating thing that is your brain.
Yeah.
Come on in. Come on over to quote Shania Twain.
Andrew, can I ask you a question though? Like,
yes.
Do you have to set up a certain kind of environment or set of circumstances to facilitate this ability to like come up with the three creative things you just said? Like, how do you do that?
Yeah. It's the most unmagical thing on the planet. That's the thing. Everything that I am saying sounds like
magic.
Thrilling and like riding a comet. It is not. It is so tiring and so gruesome. Aww. And like, you sit a lot. Like, I'm a writer, so I will have to physically sit or be in a stagnant position 4 to 6 hours a day. Mm-hmm. Right. And Maury, I know you know what this feels like because you just, you know, you've been working on your amazing book. And so I have to have, like, I have this standing desk. I'm going to show it to you right now. This calendar.
Ooh, check out our YouTube.
Truly documents.
Wait, guys, for those of you that are listening, this is a paper calendar.
It's a paper calendar. And what's on it, just so you know, is like.
His outline. Yeah.
Could you imagine? I'm like, look at this. This is when I go to Pilates. and on it is, and this is not me bragging. It's me just giving you like visibility into the mundane process. Pedantic things that then allow you to have the freedom to be creative. But like, on there will say 6 segments of output, which is 3 hours of output, right? That's 3 hours of like I was writing. It'll have like the name of a play. Like, I try to read a play every afternoon when I run out of creative steam. So like after lunch, I'll read a play. And then it'll have like what I've done for my body. It'll have, you know, a lot of other things that I'm trying to measure so that when I get to the end of a work week, I can go, oh, like I actually did the work week. And some weeks that goes great. And some weeks it's a nightmare. But you have to, I think about the circumstances that will allow you to be creative and be like rigorous in protecting them as much as you think about the weird, crazy ideas.
Yeah. So what I'm hearing you say is like there's some discipline and rigor to your life and your day to allow space for creativity to happen.
Without question. There's a lot.
Yeah, I can see that.
And it's required. And I think it's what happens most frequently when people are in non-creative structural rhythms.
Yeah.
And yet mad at themselves for being not creative.
Right.
It's like, well, of course you're not. Why? How could you be if the setup of what you're doing is antithetical to how creativity works?
Yeah.
There's an amazing book by Jill Bolt Taylor called My Stroke of Insight. I don't know if either of you know it, but I could not recommend it enough. It's a story of a neurologist who has a stroke. So she's able to write about and speak about having the stroke in like
neurology
the most
terms.
Specific aware terms. Like, it's like, if think about if the thing you study is the exact thing that happens to you.
Right.
But what it becomes about is she essentially loses ability in a lot of the parts of her brain that were focused on facts and systems and structure. And the other parts of her brain that were far more focused on creativity and language and color like blossomed and took over. So she essentially like writes a ton about how creativity functions in the brain. And I don't actually know how we got on that, but I believe that if I go back and listen to this podcast, why I just recommended that book is relevant. Hashtag steroids.
Yeah, no, it's because I was asking you about the circumstances that allow for creativity. It's my friend Erin.
Oh yeah, wait, yes, thank you, God bless.
Who's a theater actress, you know her, Andrew. She used to always say to me, you know, creativity requires a canvas, and canvases have boundaries. Like, it's not just endless open space. There's got to be some boundary to it.
I was just going to say, that's been the most fascinating takeaway for me yet, is that there's structure around creativity. You think quite the opposite. Like, you need, you need a complete space and room to do whatever you need to foster creativity. But you're saying you actually need a lot of regimented time.
Yeah, and I do. I mean, I'm sure other people do it differently, but I absolutely do.
So that, but that really helps me into my next question, which is relevant to my personal experience I'm going through right now, is can anyone be creative? Do you feel like you were born with this creativity, or can we all, is there a way we can all tap into our creativity?
Yes, everyone can tap into their creativity, period.
Oh, can you elaborate? Question mark.
No, I think you can. You know, like it's in the same way. Can everyone tap into their empathy? Right? Can any of everyone tap into their?
Can they?
The answer is, I do. I believe that.
Wow.
Yeah.
What if you're like a tax accountant?
Yeah.
Are you creative?
Who eats the same meals every day? The same food.
I think the question was: do we each have like the ability to be creative?
Right. Yes.
So and even the tax accountant does.
Absolutely. Right. Absolutely. It's just a cat. Like, there's so many questions. Like, what's the category of creativity? Like, I think there's a real risk that that creativity gets this like sacred place on a pedestal of like you have or you don't have, or you're blessed or you don't have, or like you're not blessed.
Right. I agree.
It doesn't work like that. It also, you know, like energy follows focus. And energy follows interest. So like right. If the tax accountant is like, I could give two shits about, you know, journaling for 15 minutes a day to see what my, you know, what I want to put out in the world. Right. Like if they don't care about that, then that's they're not going to be creative.
Right.
Right. So I think if they care, then absolutely. And I think people have to like really assess why they want to be creative, like how they are leveraging that word and why,
right.
Because like so often it can intersect with like, I want to be seen and heard, or I want to do better at my fancy high stakes job, or I want to look cool, right? Like per the whole like social media and we're all promoters now world, like,
right.
You know, I want to look a certain way. And I think what you have to think about is like, how can it be of value to you? Like alone in the world, how can you feel good? Like I just finished a play recently that, yes, I will have produced and hope to have produced. And I like am looking forward to those steps. But just the act of giving birth to it,
right.
And then being able to move through the world of feeling what that feels like and the confidence of that is like the best feeling on the planet.
Yeah.
So I think like... I think everyone can access it. It's just like doing the work of like why you're trying to access it and therefore like what the definition of, you know, like a win is with it.
Sorry, I was just going to say, maybe we should like, what is your definition of creativity? Maybe we need to have an expanded idea of it.
Love
what
that.
Does it mean?
Oh God. Well, I don't actually like, this is not coming from any place of like, because I so bypass this question. Like I don't ask this question ever. Because it is just a given to me that underneath every single human, there is something sparkling and fascinating that would just light me up. Even the most boring, quote unquote, boring, basic tax accountant, you know, for all your tax accountant listeners, the point of that is like, when I teach or when I work, I'm not like, okay, the definition of creativity is this, and this is how we find it. Cause I just think it's a given that it's there. But I would say that it is the desire and steps taken to manifest something in the world that wasn't there before, or that represents on the exterior something that is going on in the interior.
That I love.
Something in some version of that is how I really relate to it.
The desire to manifest something in the world that wasn't there before, or to materialize something on the exterior that lives on the interior.
Yeah.
I love
that. Sounds good when you give it back to me.
You said it verbatim. I can't remember things that well. That was amazing. I'm impressed with both of you right now.
I'm listening with both ears when Andrew's talking, Bean.
Wow. And I also love that we're saying that creativity can be whatever it is to you. Like your creativity may not be creative to me,
right.
But that doesn't mean that it's not your level of creativity.
Right.
Correct. And that's where that's where the hard work comes in.
Right.
Because believe me, like I have a lot of fancy people in my life that are doing big, fancy, shiny things.
Like us?
And like the two of you. Oh. And so it's very easy for me to say like, oh, my 2 months of going to coffee shops and writing this play is surely not as fancy as, you know, this person that I know that's about to get their EGOT. You know, like, it's so easy to say like, oh, someone else's creativity is better or more. Like, the hard work is being like, oh no, this matters to me, and therefore I'm going to commit to it.
So let's help our listeners. Let's do some like tangible tools, which is, I feel like I say tangible tools on every episode, but I really like, I like tangible tools. I like clear takeaways, and I would love for the listeners to have, from such a creative, have some tangible takeaway tools, TTTs, to help foster their own creativity.
The tangible takeaway tools.
Yes.
Some things to think about would include that frequency is more important than length of than duration. So, for example, I would encourage you to journal for 5 minutes a day, every single day, versus journaling for an hour one day a week. Mm-hmm. Because anything you can do to train your body to make it part of the rhythm and routine of your every single day will absolutely pay off. I said this earlier, but that 80-20 rule is really critical. Like, are you committing 80% of your time to the hard work and focus on the project or the thing you want to manifest, and not just relying on the 20%, you know, spark of delight? Mm-hmm. There's a beautiful book by Twyla Tharp called The Creative Habit, which if you're like truly like wanting to deepen this in an active way in your life, I would say go get that. It has a amazing like workbook and narrative to it. And there's like a whole artist inventory that I find so helpful, where it like asks you to think about like your first creative act in the world, or when you were younger, what creative thing motivated you, et cetera. And it's a very like, it's very tangible. It's mm-hmm. very action driven. And okay, like, what do you do about this right now, versus some books that are just like, you know, those are a few things to chew on. There's more, especially when it comes to storytelling, that I could, you know, kind of wander off into. Mm-hmm. But in terms of like, the key is just, how do you make it as every day as all of the other rhythms and habits that we have, which frankly is harder than ever.
Right.
Right. Totally. Like, our attention spans, yes, with social media, with phones, it is harder than ever. So even like the act of just taking that time in and of itself is a radical act.
Would you guys like to hear what first came to my mind when you asked about, think about the first time you put something creative out into the world?
Obviously.
I immediately was transported to, I'm going to say 1991, perhaps, where my sister and my cousin and I all created a video called The Gax That Invaded Landville. Do you recall GAC? It was like the slime of the 90s. And we had Barbies like laid out on things, and then the GAC would fall from the sky and splat onto the Barbies. So, wow. What do you think that means, Andrew? Get into my head right now.
Was that a film? Was that a film?
It was a film with a video recording camera.
Oh, beautiful.
Thank you. I could probably find it if anyone's interested.
Let's link that to the show notes.
But that's a great example.
Thank you.
Like that, like, in, that's a great, but that, like, you're, that's the same,
what does that mean?
Body and the same brain, the same, like, it's not about what it means. It's that it's like, right. It's like, it sits in front of you like a candle or like a talisman of sorts, because it's like, that is you.
It is
right?
Kind of me.
Younger you, but yeah. Like that.
No, that's her right now.
That's pretty me right
that's
now.
That's her. Well, that's her, you right now, but also like your insides then are your insides now. So like, if it ever you're having a moment where you're like, I am not creative, it means that you've then suddenly shortchanged the connection to that actual memory, which is not fair to you.
Which is Bean's whole theory.
Andrew, this girl who says she's not creative, for my 40th birthday, I love Michael Jackson. For my 40th birthday, she made a whole new video where she got a red Michael Jackson leather jacket. She wrote lyrics to, instead of Beat It, Bean It, and literally recorded a whole video singing about Bean and Bean It to the tune of Beat It.
I didn't say I wasn't creative. I said that I am having trouble with this new role that feels overwhelming. I cannot tap into my creativity.
And the thing that I will, what I just want to offer there, and it's when I teach storytelling, I will often say, sometimes in the moment, you need storytelling. And then sometimes in the moment, you need a chair. So like, if you need to change a light bulb, you need a chair and you got to stand on the chair and change the fucking light bulb. Right. So often when we think about creativity and storytelling is we think it's going to show up everywhere all the time.
Yes.
And 9 times out of 10, you don't need a story. Like if you ask me for directions to the market, I'm going to tell you a left and a right and then go a mile.
Right.
You don't need me to be like, well, when my grandmother cooked eggplant, it was like, you don't need it.
I do.
So you might need that.
I need to hear about your grandmother's eggplant.
The reason that I offer that is because I think that there's a risk that when you're in those categories of like doing, where honestly your action should be like technical and boring and learning. Like it should, you should just remind yourself, you're like, oh yeah, it's like I'm taking a course at the community college that I have to take and I'm just going to learn this weird skill.
Right.
And then when that is complete, or like when you've like finished that category of work, then you can switch over to the creative side of things. Doing them at the same time is like literally impossible, yes. Which is why earlier I mentioned that book, My Stroke of Insight, because like that for her is like all about the story of how our brain chemically, physiologically can't do those things at the same time,
yeah.
And actually needs like the structured self or the structured dynamic in the moment to be settled before you then go into the free imaginative space.
Yeah. Oh, so get skills and then know that the creativity is there. Your creativity will be there.
I have to but you just gave me an idea. I will write at a different time. I have to write captions. Yeah. And I'm like, because I'm so focused on the push this button and add this here, maybe I need to separate the two and do them in different moments.
You have to, because they're completely different muscles. Wow. Right? It's like a muscle group thing. Like, why would you?
That actually, Andrew, this is a question I had when I thought about talking to you. Is like, you know, one of the roadblocks we have in our minds about creativity as an everyday person is like, well, yeah, of course, an artist or a writer or a director or a performer is going to naturally have creativity as part of their work. What about people who have a day job in an office? Like, what does creativity look like at work versus in your personal life?
Well, I think it goes a little bit back to that conversation we were having around like, what is the curiosity? Like, what's the hunger and where's the hunger coming from?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because that hunger could be coming from a lot of different places. What's magical about creativity and storytelling and writing is that it solves a ton of those.
Right.
So like if you write or you are creative, your mental health will improve. So like, I think some of the work is just being like, oh, what am I actually hungry for? What am I solving for? Like, you know, is this like transmuting like anxiety or loneliness, or is this actually like my creative spirit that's wanting to have a say in the world to be more creative?
Right.
And I think in the work setting or like a more structured setting, it can work both ways. I think that there's a real risk in highly corporate organized institutions and companies of this like, be creative, we want to foster creativity. But there are a lot of boundaries to that.
Yeah.
And it's like, it goes right back to Melissa, what we were just talking about, which is like, okay, so I'm supposed to think about market share and my budget and about the 20 people that I supervise while I'm also trying to think about the most moving emotional message that I can bring to life.
Yeah.
So I think that it really can be very difficult. And I think that it's going to sound counterintuitive, but is to really calibrate expectations. Right? That think about the sector in which you are working and what you believe is possible for that and how you can push it in that direction.
Because within it will boundaries. Be
incremental.
Yeah.
Without question.
Right.
Yeah. Like there's such a difference between you writing something or painting something or making something alone than with a team of 25 people accountable to, you know, shareholders or some other, you know, large structure. Yeah. They just are different. And I think too often folks beat themselves up because they're in a, you know, quote unquote 9-to-5 job. And they're like, I'm not able to be creative. And that's actually not what it's made to do. Like not to steal 12-step language, but like, you know, don't go to the hardware store for milk. You know, that's not where that's going to be.
Right. I feel like when I'm coaching corporations, one of the things I talk about where creativity does overlap is, you know, creativity exists in the ability to just share new ideas. So
100%.
What you said about the internal life manifesting externally, for me, it's like at work, creativity needs to be about what just, you know, I heard something in this meeting.
it sparked something, or I read something this morning, or I was listening to a podcast, it sparked an idea. Just having the courage to say that out loud, even if it is thinking totally differently than the rest of the group or the rest of the team.
Absolutely, especially if it is. And I think that that's why I, earlier when we were talking about my upbringing, like the connection between energy and creativity, like to me, they're almost the same thing. Because like, if I didn't have creativity to solve for my energy, like that would, we would be in real trouble. And the reason I bring that up, Maury, is I think what you're saying is spot on. That is like, if you just are motivated and energetic, that is an, in and of itself an act of creativity, right? Right. Like you said, like if you're listening to a song or a podcast, it makes you think of a thing that you tell a supervisor that makes you want to bring in a colleague to pitch a new idea. Even if the new idea is like very simple, those steps are reflective of someone who is motivated and excited about what it is that they make.
Yeah.
And therefore they're going to be more creative in that direction. And I think that's why like that word is more universal, and why like, yes, like the to keep it going, the tax accountant is very creative, because they, it being creative is not just about like I wrote or I painted or I made a thing. It's about how it is that you actually do the thing you've got to do day in and day out.
Yeah. A creative accountant is a valuable asset.
Wow. I'm ready to see
tell you that.
We've really come around. Now this episode has been sponsored by the
by the tax accountants of America.
Yeah.
And I'm ready for you to write a play about a creative tax accountant.
And you have to credit us with the idea.
Hold on now.
Andrew,
now there's some boundaries.
Question for you. This is something I really want to hear your perspective on. How do creativity and intuition intersect?
I mean, I think they're the same thing. I think they are the exact same thing. Absolutely.
Tell us more.
Absolutely. Because, well, it's just, it's about... I mean, it's what we've said over and over. It's how a thing on the inside can get manifested externally. And that manifestation could be like, oh, I want to make a thing. But it could also be like, I want a life that looks a certain way, or I want to be a certain person that does this. And it's all about cultivating the skills to be able to listen to it.
Yeah.
I think they're the exact same thing. There's a beautiful book by Rachel Aviv called Strangers to Ourselves. And she writes all of these different profiles on quote unquote mentally ill people, but the dynamics for each of their circumstances is just so much more nuanced. Mm. And she also writes about them using their journals. So like they speak for themselves. Mm-hmm. But in the introduction, she talks about the psychic hinterlands where like language fails us when it comes to like labeling, you know, like the, and so that's why, like, for me, like, it's why when I go like to different 12-step programs or therapy or all the different like modalities that I do, I have to just like have an asterisk in my head, because like for me, my intuition is the same thing as my mental health, which is the same thing as my creativity, which is the same thing as my spirituality, which is the same thing as my higher power.
Yeah.
And so when I honor, it's why like when I put on the Judds when I'm walking the dogs in the morning, because that's the song that hit my head. When that happens, it's not just like, oh, that's cute. Like I'm actually, I like levitate. Like I leave the earth because like I have zipped in, and it's like a little ceremony.
Yeah.
So I think they're the same thing. And I think what's beautiful about that is like you can attend to one and then suddenly you're attending to all. Like to take care of your mental health is suddenly to attend to your creativity, right? Yeah. To take care of, you know, your spirituality is suddenly to attend to your intuition. Like,
yes.
I think that that's the, for me, the like they all become the same.
Oh, so beautifully said. And if I can say, Andrew and I have talked a lot about this, obviously, because I deal in intuition, Andrew deals in creativity. And, you know, it's so clear, Andrew, that your higher self is that creative self. Like that when you are in your creativity, you are in your higher self. That's just, it's one in the same. Totally.
Yeah, 100%.
All right, I got to know. You are the super duper schmooper creative. how can you be inspired? Who inspires you? I want to know also who inspired you when you were younger.
When I was younger, Whoopi Goldberg.
Oh,
I was obsessed. Oh no, I was obsessed with Whoopi Goldberg.
Oh, I love that.
I hit the exact age, whatever it was, 12 or whatever Sister Act 1 came out.
I was just going to say, it must have been Sister Act.
So it was Sister Act 1, but then I pretty quickly was like, who is this person? And went back and watched Color Purple and fell in deep.
Wow.
So for about 10 years, I was like, ride or die. Like, I have seen everything. I made Whoopi Goldberg Day, November 13th, which is her birthday, a holiday. Like, our school would celebrate Whoopi Goldberg Day.
Does she know about this? I feel like somebody needs to alert
her. Well, maybe they'll alert her to a stalker. No, I'm not a stalker.
No.
I was interviewed. Remember that MTV show Fanatic?
Yes.
Where they would. Yeah, yes. I was interviewed on that and I didn't get selected. Part of me thinks that they're like, this kid's too weird.
Too far.
Too creative. Too creative, let's say.
But I think, I also loved her solo show that first launched her onto Broadway that Mike Nichols directed with her. Like, so she really became this human and icon that really demonstrated what I wanted to do in the world to a large degree.
Wow. What about currently? I mean, that could not have been a better answer.
We didn't even prep that.
It just came to me. I was curious because he mentioned how creative he was when he was a kid.
Stay right here.
Oh my God, yes. It's going to be like a signed guitar by Whoopi Goldberg.
A signed guitar.
It's a cereal box.
It's so funny because I just found this yesterday because I was cleaning things out. Okay. When I was 13, for my birthday, my mother took me to see Whoopi Goldberg on stage, and a funny thing happened on the way to the film. And I sat in the front row.
What?
Wow. And I sent her flowers backstage with a note that basically was like, I'm your biggest fan. This is how you've changed my life. I'm the kid in the front row in the cow tie. I was wearing a tie that had a cow on it because I was 13 and a faggot. and...
Are you allowed to say that? Is it
He's
like
allowed to say it?
I can say that.
Okay.
I can say it.
You cannot say it.
Got it. Noted.
And she sent back to me an intermission from an usher two things. This playbill.
Oh my God. It's a signed playbill.
To Andrew, thanks, love Whoopi. And then I might cry reading this because it's in her hand. This is her handwriting. And she has written, Dear Andrew, first thank you for the note. I see you and your tie. Forgive me this evening, but I'm so tight for time tonight that I won't be able to see you tonight. I'm very happy that you are a fan. Please accept this program in lieu of me. Again, thank you. Love, Whoopi Goldberg, St. James Theater.
Oh my God.
Is that not?
Bravo, I have goosebumps Whoopi.
Right now. You can see
I have goosebumps.
Isn't that the classiest shit?
Ever.
Yes.
I will say that because I'm such a little indefatigable creature, I did the same thing with Reba McEntire at Annie Get Your Gun and I got nothing.
Oh, Reba.
Well, shout out to Whoopi for really seeing and valuing a young kid who was inspired. Yeah.
Oh my God.
She's the real fucking deal.
That is really for sure.
If you haven't gone to listen to her, she just released a book called Bits and Pieces that's beautiful that she reads the audiobook of. So if you're looking for stuff to listen to while you walk around, give it a listen.
Oh my God, you gave us so many resources. Okay,
so
Andrew,
many.
We literally could talk to you for eight hours.
Can I ask who his current inspo is? I mean, childhood inspo, Whoopi. Give me one.
Whoopi's always alive, inspo. But
Whoopi for life. Whoopi for life.
Her name is Sarah Polley. She's a writer and a director. She's also an actor. Her most famous film is Women Talking that she adapted from the book, and she won an Oscar for.
Wow.
But she is really brilliant about intersections between documentary real life storytelling and how it manifests in front of us. And if you've never seen the film Stories We Tell, which is her first kind of breakthrough documentary, go watch it, especially if you're interested in identity and family and storytelling and what's true of memory and what's not. It is so fantastic.
I love it. I love all the resources you give us. Okay, Andrew. So before we let you go, we want to hear about you. What's next for you? What are you working on creatively that you're excited about? Can you give us a little sneak peek into the works of Andrew?
Sure. Happy to. I've been working for years on a cycle of plays called The Dragon Cycle, written and performed by Sarah Porkolab, who's an incredible writer and performer. And it is a three-part, so three separate plays, that tell her family story from a different matriarch's point of view. So the first one is her grandmother's point of view, the second one her mom's, and the third one hers. They are riveting, thrilling, moving, beautiful pieces based on real life. If you're in the East Coast area, you can come see Dragon Mama, the second in the series, at Williamstown Theater Festival, July 2nd through 14th. If you are in the LA area, you can see Dragon Lady, which is going to be at the Geffen starting September 12th for a month. And if you're going, if you're up in the Bay Area, you can see Dragon Lady at Center Rep, which is out near Oakland, in October. So that is what's coming up next. But please let me know if you're coming.
Where's Williamstown?
Williamstown, Massachusetts is like 3 hours, 3.5 hours north of New York City.
Right. I am coming to Dragon Lady in September for sure. I just wrote it down.
You're coming to the Geffen for sure.
I am for sure. That's exciting.
Yeah, it's a good lineup. But you can, I'm on Instagram as Hey Hey Andy K, and I post about all my shows and stuff there. So if you are curious, please come see one of those shows.
Oh my God. Absolutely. Go see one of those shows. Andrew, thank you for taking the time out of your day. And also truly just spending time with you is inspiring. It really was. I think you inspired both of us. So thank you for that.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Thank you for doing what you do. I love this podcast. I love what you put out in the world. We need it. So thank you.
Thank you, Andrew. Well, Bean, that was an amazing conversation. Andrew, like I said, you inspired 100%. Us guys. If you found this inspiring, please, please, please share it with a friend, a family member, a neighbor, anyone who you think would be uplifted by this episode so that they can access their creativity too. And thank you as always for listening. Until next week. Bye. This has been another episode of Signal, the podcast that raises your frequency. This podcast is co-hosted and produced by myself, Maury Fontanez, and Melissa Grushka. Special thanks to our sound editors, Armand Kassam and Anushree Thekadeth. Make sure to join us next week for another episode.